and welcome to the Opening Bell, the Boxing News Podcast. My name is Matt Christie. Again, I'm joined by my colleague and friend, John Dennan.
Colleague and friend. That's the first time you've ever said that on the podcast.
Is it?
I don't know.
So I got back from Las Vegas a couple of days ago.
And you were in great form.
I am in considerably better condition than I was when I arrived, literally after no sleep on the plane, came in for press day and arrived here about 11, half 11? I can't remember what time it was, but it was a long old day.
And there's a big issue of the magazine to go to press. Sort of last weekend felt like one of the biggest weekends of the year, just in terms of action and everything that was going on. Because as well as Mayweather, there was all this Stevenson, Joshua at the O2.
Yeah. You were at Joshua.
I was.
We'll talk about that in a bit. Let's talk about, you've since watched Mayweather.
Yep.
Impressed?
Yes, but for some reason, I found it the sort of least riveting Mayweather fight that I've seen. I'm not really sure why that is. Maybe because all the previous Mayweather fights were building up to something, i.e. Pacquiao. Then we got Pacquiao, the sort of the big one that we all wanted. And I know it's been heavily criticised, but I still found it fascinating. And then for some reason, Mayweather Berto just normally I'd quite happily watch Mayweather hit a bag.
Yeah.
But this fight didn't really have that usual buzz for me. I mean, what was it like in Vegas?
First off, let me just say that there's no point when I go to trips or any of us go to trips that we take it for granted. It's always a great honour to be there, and it's always a great honour to represent Boxing News at these events in Las Vegas. But certainly when I arrived this time, I was aware that there wasn't anything like the buzz that we experienced before. It was an alarming contrast between Mayweather Pacquiao and Mayweather Berto. And I think on the surface, you understand why. Berto is no Pacquiao. Berto had done little to deserve the showdown, but I thought they'd make more of the fact that it was Mayweather's last outing. For me, that was the biggest selling point, irrespective of whether he goes on to fight again or not. So I thought it'd be everywhere that this is the last chance you're going to get to see Floyd Mayweather perform in a boxing ring.
A sort of Mayweather festival.
Yeah, almost. And I felt like they'd kind of had missed a trick, really, with that. And then it was really the only point of interest for a couple of days. Is this going to be your last fight? Yes. Are you sure? Yes.
Because those were the questions everyone was asking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you really retiring? Are you really, really retiring?
Yeah, and that was it. And that was it. Because there was no... I mean, even when we were out there for Mayweather Pacquiao, although the vast, vast majority believed Mayweather would win, people were expecting an interesting fight. There was a lot to talk about. But nobody, not one single person, gave Berto even the slightest chance whatsoever.
Until you on Friday night.
Until me on Friday night. No, I mean, normally we will have a chat, and there was... You get that chat between journalists, you know, what would you do if Berto won? What would this mean if Berto won? But I don't think anybody really believed that Berto stood a chance. But he conducted him, I thought Berto conducted himself from start to finish, from the pre-fight press conferences, in the fight itself, and in the post-fight press conference. I thought Berto conducted himself very well. I don't think he could have performed any better in the fight than he did.
He gave it a pretty good go, didn't he?
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd like to see Berto again against one of the lesser welterweight champions, Kell Brook.
Exactly, yeah. I think what this has done is put Berto, I think he proved a few years ago, I think 2010 there was a bit of a, there was some belief that he may go on to be something special, but I think what happened in the years following that with the losses to the likes of Guerrero, Victor Ortiz and Jesus Soto Carrasco confirmed that he was never going to get to that level that some thought he might. But what he proved against Mayweather is he looks like he belongs in the welterweight top 10. And, there's some good fights out there for him. If he performs with this level of intensity, or he trains and prepares with this level of intensity, because you did sense beforehand that he was pumped up for this like nothing else.
Mm.
The occasion certainly didn't get to him, and he seemed absolutely determined.
One of the biggest news items, I guess, from the whole week would be that it emerged that Mayweather rehydrated with an IV before the Pacquiao fight, which he wasn't meant to do but then got a therapeutic use exemption.
Yeah, it was, he got that, which is what, and we're led to believe that people knew about that, or both camps knew about what was going on beforehand. But the fact that, I mean, the reason that I think it's the World Anti-Doping Agency that kind of, that's on their ban list, you don't do that, is because it can, as well as its rehydration, it can disguise performance-enhancing drugs in the system. So it kind of opened the doors. It opened the doors for some serious questions, really. But it wasn't. It was. I mean, the timing of the article. It came out. I can't remember what morning it was now. I think it was the whichever day the final main fight press conferences were. It was the morning there. It was dropped at a pretty noteworthy time for it to get attention, and it was literally an hour before the press conference.
But you can see the sense of the timing, because that's when it had maximum impact and maximum attention. Did Mayweather sort of steer clear of that subject in press conferences?
He steered clear of it.
He issued a statement, and I guess
they were all. I sense they're all a little bit nervous before. Not Mayweather, but kind of Leonard Ellerby was kind of uncharacteristically stumbling over his words a little bit when he was introducing that first press conference. So I sense they were a bit nervous about it, but the subject was certainly not welcome. And then I think a statement was released maybe an hour, 2 hours after that press conference.
And after USADA had issued their own statement, they were sort of fully backing Mayweather. But I can't imagine the Nevada State Athletic Commission was too happy with how USADA is sort of, because USADA had been sort of conducting itself almost independently.
Yeah.
I don't think the regulator had been informed, so I think there are big questions for USADA to answer as well.
No, I think it's, the whole thing is really, really, really concerning. To me, and Bob Bennett, the guy in Nevada, the head of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Bob something.
I think it could be Bob Bennett, because Mr. Aguiar is like Bob chief Bennett. Executive, but he could be something
Bob Bennett was speaking to the media, and he was saying that basically Mayweather. They were not going to look into it any further. Mayweather had done nothing wrong, and that was their official. That was the end. That was it. That is it. That's our last line on it. He's done nothing wrong. We're not going to investigate it further. There were some boxers there that saying it's not uncommon for people to use that method of rehydration after a weigh-in, and it's not uncommon for athletes to do that. To use that method of rehydration. Whether that's the case or not, the fact is that it that is banned by the World Anti-Doping Agency for a reason. And kind of the thing that just suddenly became clear about the whole thing, to me at least, or the opinion that I formed, was that it would have taken a hell of a lot for Mayweather Pacquiao to have been cancelled.
Yeah.
It just seemed to me, this isn't a good reflection on the sport of boxing. It just seemed that, you know, that you had that going on with Mayweather. On the other hand, Pacquiao is clearly injured and asking for a painkilling injection, which he was denied. And it just makes you wonder. It doesn't paint that whole fight in a good light now, you know. And perhaps it wasn't because of the levels of disappointment that kind of followed it. But you kind of just felt that, you know, that fight really shouldn't have happened. But because the amount of money involved, it was always going to at that stage.
You kind of, I mean, it would have been disastrous if, say, Pacquiao had pulled out with a shoulder injury.
It would have been, and he'd have got probably more stick for pulling out than he got for actually the admission afterwards.
And during the fight, I mean, I didn't sense, I had no inkling that he was carrying an injury until he said, afterwards.
No, exactly. I don't think that injury would have had much bearing on it, on the whole result. And I'm not here saying that I think that Mayweather was taking anything untoward, but the fact is that the rules were broken, and there doesn't seem to be any further investigation into it now. That's it now. We just accept that. Which it's just all a little bit. The whole thing is just a little bit that the fighters were too big for the sport. That they were, whereas I couldn't.
There needs to be order and control.
I just can't imagine that happening in another sport. But as I kind of make the point in this week's column, that if that had been a footballer that it had happened to, or if it had been a tennis player, that footballer wouldn't have played in that match, but the match wouldn't have been cancelled. The tennis player wouldn't have played in the tournament, but the tournament wouldn't have been cancelled. So it didn't really, it's not really the be-all and end-all. With something like Mayweather-Pacquiao, if Mayweather is adjudged to have broken rules, or Pacquiao isn't fit enough and the fight is cancelled, then that is just a massive, massive miss, isn't it? Because the whole event has to be called off.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was thought-provoking. And I don't know, there is a sense that Mayweather is bigger than the sport of boxing. You've had that sense for a while, but it was never bigger than last week in Las Vegas.
Mm. I mean, do you think it would be, why do you think boxing can't have, you know, a global drug testing body, you know, in the way, say, like Olympic sports have, you know, not, you know, proper testing year round in and out of competition, whereas in boxing at best you seem to only get testing once fights have been announced, and then the build up to it all seems pretty fragmented. Wouldn't it be just for the good of everyone?
It would be. I think the difficult thing is that just, I think it's kind of, it's also the problem, one of the main problems with boxing is that we haven't got that universal sanctioning body over the sport as a whole, so that, yeah, different wherever you are in the world, you're going to have different rules and regulations, and those rules and regulations are more bendable in certain parts of the world than they are in others, which is a great shame. It really is a great shame. I can't remember who I was speaking to recently. I think it may have been Frank Warren actually, and I mentioned about this whole thing about would it not be better if there's just one governing body and one sanctioning body. And he kind of said, well, you know, be careful what you wish for there if you compare it to the corruption that we believe that we think has happened within FIFA. However, I think boxing is crying out for one ruling body. And for particularly with a sport like boxing, when we're dealing with performance enhancing drugs, it potentially makes a sport that's already dangerous even more so, and that's the last thing that we want.
Yeah, when we're reminded of how risky the sport can be, you know, in certain countries, we've seen boxers very sadly die this week. It's just a reminder of there are risks involved, and I suppose safety precautions have to be taken sooner rather than later. Anyway, right, we'll sort that out next week.
Yeah.
I've got some stuff on this weekend. Going to the Rugby World Cup.
Are you?
Yeah. So I've got the day off tomorrow.
You're not going into any games at Brighton, are you?
Huh?
There's some games at Brighton.
No. What? Really?
Yeah.
They have rugby games in Brighton.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
Yeah, there definitely is, because my girlfriend's cousin is going to be in Brighton this weekend watching two games.
Who's playing in Brighton? Namibia?
Possibly. I can't remember now. But have a look. Look it up. Look it up and then apologise.
Oh, I'm going to Twickenham, mate.
Yeah, well, you would.
How dare you?
But, yeah, no, in terms of the event, the Floyd Mayweather, I was impressed with Mayweather's performance. I thought it was a good one. I thought it was, as Mayweather fights go, it was more interesting than I thought it was going to be. I think it's because I thought Berto would offer nothing, and I think he offered a bit more than I thought he would. I believe that Mayweather will come back.
I was just about to ask, were you convinced by all his protestations that this was the last one?
No. In the build-up to it, I really, really genuinely believe that, and he probably still believes at this moment in time, that he's not going to fight again. But the guy has been doing it. We're led to believe he's been boxing, you know, from the age of two or whatever. And anything you do for that period of time will become a drag. But there has also got to be some kind of... There's a habit there as well for him. There's obviously, that's where he makes all his money. And 6 months down the line, if he hasn't already announced that he's coming back, when he's bound to. And do you know what? And I think the one reason why I'm so convinced by it as well is it's not just the money. It's not just the fact that he wants to get to 50-0. It's how he says he's going to be spending his time now. And that is in the gym, building up his stable of fighters, trying to find a new Floyd Mayweather. He's going to be surrounded by boxing. It's not like he's taking a step back. He's going to be surrounded by boxing. He's going to be in the gym. He'll be fighting again. I mean, I remember Joe Calzaghe, when Joe Calzaghe walked away, 46-0, and he said that he knew the only way he was going to stay retired was by staying out the gym. And he stayed out the gym for, I don't know, something like a year, 18 months, maybe even longer than that. He didn't go into a boxing gym. He was doing fitness stuff, but he wasn't in a boxing gym. And then he said, about 2 years after he'd retired, he went back into the gym and he started doing pads. And he thought, I've still got this. I can still do this. And then he just had a little swift word with himself and was like, right, actually, no, I'm not going back into boxing. I just think if Mayweather is just straight back in his gym, doing sparring, he's going to want to fight again. He needs to take a step back. He needs to just go away for it and try and enjoy those millions.
You don't think Calzaghe should get in four quick fights before the end of the year? You know, fight four journeymen, just get to 50-0, just to die Mayweather.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good for us. We can whack Calzaghe on the front cover.
Yeah, no, that would be good. That would be good. But no, I'm convinced, maybe not next year, but perhaps the year after, I'm convinced that Floyd Mayweather will make a comeback. And I said it in the preview, I think, that sharing 49-0 will not sit well with him after a while.
When he was saying, because afterwards, after the fight, he was saying, you know, he didn't want fame anymore.
you know, that he wanted to be famous when he was young, but now he didn't want fame. Can you not see him wanting to just sort of try and step out of the limelight?
I don't think that's going to come if he's in Las Vegas. He's almost like, I think if he stays in Las Vegas, he's never going to be out of the limelight. I genuinely sense that he just wants to be himself for a while. He wants to go and live his life away from the glare of the cameras. And I'm not convinced there's that many people that are in the public eye, that have been in the public eye for long periods of time, that particularly enjoy that intrusion of their privacy. So I completely understand where Mayweather is coming from. I just think as a matter of professional pride, he will want to come back sooner rather than later. And the other thing is as well, is that I watched a little bit of the Victor Ortiz fight this morning on the way into work, just to really compare to see what he's like, see if he's slipped in that period of time, which I think is 4 years. And he's certainly not, he doesn't throw as many punches as he did then. He doesn't initiate exchanges as much as he did then. But he's still an amazing physical specimen. His reactions are still incredible. It all seems, I think when you're still that close to your peak, when you're on the brink of breaking the most famous record in boxing history, and you could earn a ludicrous amount of money for doing so, I think all those three factors will ensure that he returns, and I think those three factors trump the need for a quiet life when your name is Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah. All right, you're convincing. Because I was thinking, you know, before this fight, if you are so fed up with it, if you're Floyd Mayweather and you want to retire, why you've just fought Manny Pacquiao, and he didn't seem that up for the Manny Pacquiao fight. It did seem, in all the build-up, it did seem like he was treating it just as a job. He didn't seem that inspired by the occasion. It seemed like just another chore to get through. So I was wondering why even bother with this final fight against Andre Berto. But I suppose it does mean he's seen out his contract with Showtime. So if he does come back for all those reasons you said, then he's free to go back on whatever network, do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I know. I'd
he's sort of completely free to call the shots as he chooses.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we'll see. I don't think we'll ever see him come back and fight like he's fought in the last few years. He'll never come back and be fighting every May, every September, unless he has some kind of. And this crossed my mind when I was out there as well, if he has some kind of weird residency at the MGM where he's just fighting completely undemanding opponents twice a year and people are just flocking to see this great boxer. You just sense that in Las Vegas something like that could happen. But no, I don't think we'll see him fighting regularly at the top level in May and September, but there will be something that will tempt him to come back in the next 2 years. I'm almost certain.
Okay. 2016 is going to be a big year for boxing. Mayweather's return, Olympic Games.
But he's announced his retirement twice before. But after the Carlos Baldomir fight when he did it, he was in absolute floods of tears. He was emotional. This time there was really a sense that he just didn't care less about boxing anymore, and during the build up to last week I didn't feel like it was a show, the fact that he was saying this is the last time I'm going to fight. I felt like he believed that himself, but I think, as I said last week, the acid test of retirement is not walking away at the right time, it's how you deal with the urge to come back. And I think that's how we'll judge this, is when Mayweather, because the urge will come back, the urge to come back will happen to Floyd Mayweather, no question about it.
All right. Speaking of comebacks, can George Groves come back from a defeat on the undercard?
It depends to what level he's going to come back. I was convinced he was going to win. I thought he was saying all the right things in the build-up, and he just had the air of a winner, whereas Badou Jack did not. And I just felt it was all going to come together for him on the night. I think in last week's issue in Heroes and Villains, I put something like I thought Groves was going to win inside five or six rounds or something like that, which that opinion was only made stronger when I was out in Las Vegas and we saw George before. He looked great at the weigh-in as well. Not, I've seen him look a little bit gaunt around the cheeks and what have you. There's none of that. It looked like everything had been done perfectly. He said he'd been off on three little training camps, had been training for a world title fight for like 9 months or something. So he'd do a little training camp, then they'd feel like they were peaking, so they'd go and just take 2 weeks off, then they'd come back again. And he just seemed like he was in perfect shape. Even for the first maybe minute and a half, 2 minutes of that first round, I thought he was going to do it.
And then
it went wrong, and he came back into it. And even at the six round mark, and I think all three judges after six rounds had George Groves 1 point ahead, all three judges. And it started to go, and then he just seemed exhausted in the second half of the contest. He really let things slip, and he came on strong. I thought maybe he let round 11, I thought he shaded round 12. But it wasn't quite enough on my card. You have to remember I was also blogging at the same time. So I would never, you know, shout about how I scored the fight as a consequence, because there are times when my eyes will wander down onto the keyboard, I'm afraid.
It does make it hard doing three things at the same time, because we live blog on the website, take our notes for the magazine report, and also watch the fight.
Exactly. But my impression was that Badou Jack had won, and he deserved to. I spoke to a few other British journalists who weren't live blogging, and the reason I spoke to the British journalists was because I thought because of Groves' reaction of him storming straight out of the ring, I thought if people who are going to be convinced that Groves has won, it's going to be the British guys.
Yeah.
Not one of the British guys thought that George Groves deserved the decision. None of the Americans I then subsequently spoke to scored it for George Groves. Badou Jack deserves credit for being a lot better than many people thought. I don't think he's necessarily up there with the best one or two super middleweights in the world, but he's certainly better than we thought, and he deserves that credit. George Groves landed with his right hand flush once or twice. Jack barely flinched. So he's a tough cookie, and he showed some good stuff in there, and he's worthy of that world title belt. But as for George Groves, I'm not sure. I mean, I've since spoke to somebody who's watching it on the television, and they said that they could hear George Groves' corner saying, "You've just got, before the last round, you've got 3 minutes to go and then you're world champion," which may perhaps explain things, that they thought their man was doing a lot better than the judges had it. And so that's why Groves, when the final bell went, was just absolutely convinced that he'd won. I think the other thing, though, that's a bit concerning regarding Groves' future prospects is the fact that his immediate reaction was one of disgust, was a little bit of, "Oh, woe is me." And the comments that he made immediately afterwards, there was not any, it was all, "I felt that I won." And for the third consecutive fight in a row, it was all, "I didn't deserve to lose. It's not fair." Or whatever. And I think,
sorry, was more the first Froch fight where he
his talk after the Froch rematch a lot of it was a lucky punch. How many times have you heard that it was a lucky punch that he got knocked out with? Okay, he went on Twitter and said, I got knocked the F out. But he said more than once it's a lucky punch. You sense that perhaps he's not quite ready to accept some of his own faults here. But he's also only 27 years old. So
can he get back to a world title fight?
I certainly think he's got the ability to do it. I really do. And I think the fact that you have to remember as well is that, you know, Badou Jack is now based in Las Vegas. So effectively, Groves was in his backyard. I know he's from Sweden, but he's based in Las Vegas. So Groves went and lost a split decision in Las Vegas to a guy based in Las Vegas who is in the Mayweather gym on a Floyd Mayweather card, which on paper isn't necessarily a bad achievement in a world title fight. Sorry, not necessarily that bad a result. I do just think there's some things perhaps mentally that need addressing with George Groves if he is to go on and win a world title. But in terms of his ability, I still believe he's got that ability that you need and that talent that you need to go on and win a world title. And the one thing going for him is that he's only 27.
So what route do you think he could take to get back there? Chasing an Arthur Abraham fight?
The Arthur Abraham would seem a natural. I don't think you get the thing is as well. I mean, he was speaking about how difficult it was and what a long road it was to come back from the second second Carl Froch fight, which suggests that he wouldn't be willing to come back to Britain and go like the domestic route and fight any domestic title fights, which you can understand. But you know, I mean, I still think a James de Gale showdown would be huge, in spite of that result. Not as huge because it's not a unification fight. But I just think the story between them, and I think Groves would thrive in selling that fight again, like he did against Carl Froch. And I think it would sell, and I think it's an appealing fight between two top level British super middleweights.
I'm down with that. And of course Groves is the win over to Gale.
Of course he does, yeah. Yeah.
If that happens, wouldn't happen anytime soon, would it? That would be a 2016 fight. Gale might be fighting again in mid-November.
Yeah.
Which would, maybe in America, I guess in America, because he signed with Al Haymon now. I quite like to see Groves to Gale on that December 12-2 show, but they don't need to put it on that because that's already sold out.
No, it's true. It's true. No, that would... I wouldn't be surprised if it was made sooner than that. I think from, you know, De Gale's camp's point of view. I mean, if Groves had won that fight, he'd beaten Badou Jack, he'd gone into it with a world title. He also went into it with a win over De Gale. Then he's in a pretty strong position on the negotiating table, whereas that position has been weakened and oddly might make it a little bit easier to make, if you know what I mean. But
I think, you know, maybe with Mayweather Pacquiao as the example, maybe once Pacquiao's negotiating position was weakened, maybe that made it, you know, more possible actually to come to an arrangement.
So yeah, we'll see. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that. I wouldn't be surprised to see that next year. But as somebody mentioned yesterday, they wouldn't be surprised if they didn't see Groves in a boxing ring again, just because, you know, I think he's probably financially secure. Does he want to keep doing this? But I think we'll see him back.
Yeah.
I think we'll see him back.
Maybe not for a long time, though.
He might take away. No, that was his official statement, wasn't it? Once the dust has settled, look, I'm going to take some time to see what I want to do next, and maybe we won't hear from him for 6 months.
And maybe you'll want to go straight back into a big fight. Maybe he won't want to do the sort of, because the route he came back was fighting for, well, fighting with Brass straight after the loss to Carl Froch, which is pretty, you know,
it
was a good move.
It was a matter of months, wasn't it, when he did that?
And then he had what, you know, he fought a sort of pretty random guy.
Dennis Douglas.
Quite soon after that. Maybe he won't want those sort of lesser tier fights. Maybe he'll want to go straight to a big name.
Yeah, maybe he will. And I think, do you know what, I'm not convinced either of those two fights helped George Groves.
Would you say he looked better against Badu Jack than he did in those sort of two previous fights?
For the first 2 minutes of round one he did, and then maybe rounds 2 to 6 he did. I think it was either round 5 or round 6, I looked at him, I thought, man, he looks absolutely exhausted. But you've got to understand that he was knocked down heavily in that first round, and that takes a level of fitness just to come back from that.
Yeah, well, there's a huge effort to get himself back into the fight, because it looked like it was all over.
Yeah.
You know, look, once the way, because he was knocked down heavily, it looked like it was only a matter of time before those same shots came. So I thought, ultimately he did pretty well to, come back into the fight and be ahead at the halfway stage.
I think it was... I thoroughly enjoyed the fight. I just think his reaction afterwards, which in the heat of the moment, he'd spent 9 months of his life building up to that moment. If he was been told that he was winning, then I suppose he's got every right to believe that he was winning. But there was something about it that just didn't sit well. It didn't sit well, and it made me kind of wonder about his future. But he's certainly got the ability. He's one of the best talents in Britain still. It's just going to be really interesting to see where we go from here with George Groves.
I'm surprised how gracious boxers are in their sort of post-fight interviews, you know, after they lose. If that was me, I'd be throwing my toys right out the pram.
I know you would.
So is James DeGale now the best super middleweight in the world?
If we take him, I guess we're taking Andre Ward now out of it completely, aren't we? He hasn't fought at the weight for 2 years.
Yeah.
I think you've got to put DeGale at number one.
See, if that Groves fight is a long time in the making, if it happens, what are the most appealing fights for DeGale? Is it Badu Jack over in Las Vegas?
Well, he was asked afterwards, wasn't he, Badu Jack, whether... he'd be interested in in fighting James DeGale, and he said he absolutely would. He also said that he thought DeGale was a better fighter than Groves, but he complimented Groves on his jab. But there wasn't a great deal of respect between either of them going into the fight, as I suppose these days there very often isn't. So you can understand Badu Jack's reaction at the end. DeGale, Jack. I mean, what would be a bigger sell? DeGale, I think you could argue even in America, DeGale Groves would be bigger than DeGale Jack. I mean, at the weigh-in for Jack versus Groves, Groves was by far the most popular, was more popular of the two by a long way. In fact, out of everyone that weighed in, the only person that got more cheers than George Groves was Floyd Mayweather.
Do people like Mayweather now?
They were not asked about Andre Berto.
Ouch.
No, they didn't. I mean, they didn't. They didn't seem to dislike Floyd Mayweather like they have in the past.
Well, speaking of popularity, in London, Anthony Joshua is selling tickets, yo.
So, I mean, I've seen the fight, John. I mean, you were there, obviously.
It was all such a blur, man.
But, I mean, one of the questions that we posed last week in the magazine is, what would you be more surprised if Gary Cornish beat Anthony Joshua, or if Berto beat Mayweather.
I think the way you phrased the question was if your life depended on Gary Cornish winning or Berto winning, who would you go for? I went for Berto.
Yeah, I can't remember what I went for. But
we did all expect Cornish to lose quickly.
It was widely expected, wasn't it? But I mean, he went in with a record of
21-0. Yeah.
And he seemed like he gave it a bit of a go for a couple of minutes.
He went straight for him, which is kind of a risk with someone like Anthony Joshua. But then how do you box Joshua? So he's got a good jab, a really good jab. He can hit from long range. So if you stand off him and try and outbox him, you could just end up stuck on the end of those long punches. But if you go for him, and Cornish did charge at him, first he got caught by a great right hand, and then when he was in real trouble, he just charged at him and charged straight onto another right, another left hook, and that was it, over and out, pretty much half a round in.
He's Anthony Joshua. What I mean, obviously the next fight, which makes perfect commercial sense,
yeah,
is Dillian White in December, 12th of December. Dillian White said a lot of things in the last couple of weeks with an Anthony Joshua fight in mind. I mean, tell me, first of all, before we go into the good, the bad and the evil about, sorry, the good, the bad and the ugly about Joshua White, let's just, were you impressed with Dillian White? At the weekend?
Ultimately, no. I think he should. No, he's Brian Minto. He did knock out Minto quickly, so he is, and he is a big puncher. So I'm not saying Dillian's a bad fighter, but Minto was more of a handful than he should have been. You know, he was catching Dillian with punches, like right hands over the top in the second round. He made it a bit of a fight. So he went for him and got him a few times. So White didn't really deal with him as clinically as he should have done. You know, that might, sometimes it's just hard to look good against people you know you're gonna beat. And White did talk about a shoulder injury that had hampered him in the build up or in the fight. But yeah, he didn't look great.
It's a bit unfair though, isn't it, or you know, you tell me if it's not, but it seems like we're judging Dillian White's performance purely against Anthony Joshua's. Now I understand the logic in doing that, because that's the guy he's going to fight next, and that's the guy who's been saying he can beat and everything for a long time now. But just because Dillian White didn't blast out Minto in 30 seconds does not mean that, or does not automatically mean that Joshua is going to blast White out in 30 seconds, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. And White just might, you know, White just might have the style to make it uncomfortable for Joshua. I do see it being, you know, a nasty, brutal and short fight. And I think that's because White can punch hard. You know, I think he's got a pretty good left hook. And I think he's going to go for it. So I think, you know, so I think it could well be Joshua's most dangerous fight, yeah. But
not his longest.
But maybe not his longest. You know, but it's just, it is, Joshua's looked really sort of clinical in the way he's gotten rid of the guys he's gotten rid of. But, you know, if he loses his composure, if White keeps his confidence, all the, you know, White seems really sort of outspoken. He has done in sort of the press conferences when he's in the same room as Joshua. If he keeps that confidence all the way up till when he's in the ring, then it could be interesting for however long it lasts. But I think it's going to be a case of two pretty big punches going for each other. And in my opinion, Joshua's sort of greater pedigree and greater composure will probably mean he can sort of handle the charge. But I think it'll be, I think it would be quite an intense fight.
If, say, okay, so let's say that Joshua, and at this stage I also agree that Joshua will win fairly. I think it could be quite a straightforward contest for him. But let's say that happens, and we're looking to build Joshua towards world level, because it strikes me there's no point now. There's no point in kind of holding him back. I'm not saying let's throw him into a fight with Klitschko after Dillian White, but let's really make some serious inroads into those world rankings. Let's justify our spot in the top 10. Who should he be going in with?
Well, immediately after the fight, and we've got a piece on this on the BoxingNewsOnline.net website, but so immediately after the fight, obviously they're talking about White in December. December 12 is the date for that at the O2. Then they're talking about Erkin Teppert, the European champion, early next year, I guess, sort of March time. I think March is what they said. I think that's the perfect next fight. It will mean he'll have gone for Commonwealth. He'll be in this British title fight, so if he wins that, he's the British champion. And going straight into a European title fight against Erkin Teppert, who's dangerous, who's got a punch. He doesn't seem the most complicated in terms of style. But you can't knock that. And once you've won the European title, you are ready for, well, you know, you might as well go for the world after that. I think that's the sort of the sensible next step.
Is there any point in trying to season Anthony Joshua in terms of giving him someone like a Tony Thompson?
Personally, I'm not that fussed about Tony Thompson. I think he's, you know, he's quite old now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is he really going to do, you know, I don't think he's going to be the dangerous Tony Thompson that fought and that beat David Price a couple of years ago. You know, he's lost to Kubrat Pulev, hasn't he, since then? You know, you're better off with those sort of European style guys like Pulev, like Erkin Teppert. Those kind of people, you know, he might find them more straightforward in terms of style than Dillian White, but I think those fights might last a bit longer. I think he might have to be a bit more patient in terms of just dealing with them and breaking them down.
I mean, if you have a look at our rankings, have a look at our world rankings, how many of the top 10 would you pick to beat Anthony Joshua?
What,
if the fight was made tomorrow?
Right now, I don't know. I've got a lot of faith in Anthony Joshua, because we haven't seen him go the 12 rounds, but he is an athlete and he's a dedicated trainer. In the amateurs, he was against some big punchers, and he was a lot, you know, even a couple of years ago, he was a lot cruder then than he is now. And so he got hit and he took the punches. So I'd be reluctant to pick anyone against Anthony Joshua, which is a pretty big statement for someone who's only in their, what, 14th professional fight and who hasn't fought above, what, domestic level, really. But, you know, I think he could beat most heavyweights in the world.
So he could. So if the, so okay. So by some incredible run of events, Dillian White pulls out. Fury Klitschko doesn't happen. They make Joshua Klitschko for December the 12th. I say to you, John, can you write the preview for the magazine? Do you then provide copy that predicts that Anthony Joshua will beat Vladimir Klitschko?
yeah, no, but I think like surely Klitschko would be sort of, I think I'd be taking it like a punt. I think Klitschko would be the sort of general favourite because of his experience, how excellent he is. I just think that fact that I think Bryant Jennings, I mean, you know, maybe I'm sleep deprived, maybe I'm going crazy, but I think Bryant Jennings showed that, you know, age is catching up with Klitschko. to an extent. So I don't think Joshua would outbox Klitschko, but I think after 12 rounds he'd eventually get to him with his power shots. Which mean maybe I'm just going crazy, which is possible. And obviously I don't think a Klitschko fight in October the 24th is a particularly good idea. But I think he's got the capabilities of beating him. Because Klitschko sort of, he's got a really heavy right hand, but he sort of, you know, batters people down before he puts them away. So it is sort of a process. He doesn't just sort of, you know, explosively decapitate them. So I think that would give Joshua some time and some rounds. But yeah, I'm not saying this with great confidence, but why not? You know, it's time for a change.
Say, okay, man.
But like Tyson Fury would be a really difficult fight. That would be a great fight. But a couple more title fights would probably get him up into put him up in the mix. Yeah. I don't think he's fought people already. He hasn't fought people vastly different to Deontay Wilder.
You mean different to Deontay Wilder's opposition?
He hasn't fought anyone like Deontay Wilder, but I just mean the level of opposition that Wilder's fought, and he's sort of worked
into a world title.
I don't think I'm going too mad.
No, I'd agree with you there. I think
if your question, if your life depended on it, gun to your head, I'd pick Joshua.
Okay, that's interesting.
But, you know, I tell him that my life depended on him winning beforehand.
If Joshua was... I mean, who else have we got in the heavyweight division? Well, you know I love the heavyweight division. You know, I love heavyweight division. Say this time next year, Joshua is world heavyweight champion. Is there any other guys that are coming through where we really can see a revolution, are there any feasible challenges to Anthony Joshua?
Is in people who are already pros or guys who are going to sort of come up over the next few years?
I think that we'd really be looking at a really, really healthy division in 2 or 3 years' time.
I think it's going to be really interesting because Povetkin's going to be around for a while, isn't he? He's dangerous. Bryant Jennings has proved himself. Wilder is, of course, dangerous. How much longer Klitschko can go on for, I don't know. But he signed, a five-fight deal with his TV network? So he must be reckoning he's got a good 2 or 3 years left to go. So there'll be an old Klitschko on the scene. Tyson Fury, if Fury loses to Klitschko, Fury Joshua is still a massive fight because, you know, Joshua hasn't fought anyone at Fury's level yet. It's strange there are no, you know, other than Deontay Wilder, there are no American heavyweights who sort of, who you think are going to be all there, other than Bryan Jennings, who's going to be good, but not stellar. The American, super heavyweight is an amateur. The American super heavyweight from the Olympics is a pro now, so he's a pro prospect. He's a converted American football player, and he wasn't all that. So I'm not sure. So I think it's going to be difficult for him to make waves on the amateur scene. Weirdly, Britain has some good super heavyweights. It's not like a division where there's a load of strength and depth, but we've got Joe Joyce, our leader at the moment, he's hitting harder and harder. He's never been the most explosive of punches for a really big man who can do a spinning backflip after he wins a fight. But he's got a really good work rate. It comes at people like a tank. He's quite good to watch. And he's beaten a lot of the top super heavyweights in the world. Like, he battered down a Russian at the European Games. He's beaten the Cuban in Cuba. So hopefully he will qualify for the Rio Olympics. You know, and he might even do well. Even though he's not a sort of, he's not flashy what he does, but he just comes at you and keeps on going. So he's getting on a bit. And then we've got Fraser Clark, who's the sort of number two, you know, who's got good skills. He can hit hard, getting better all the time. There's this, you know, 17-year-old who's like already on the podium squad. He's going to super heavyweight. So it's kind of interesting. They won't be around for a few years yet. And it's weird now that you ask me, and I've picked Anthony Joshua to beat every heavyweight on the planet. When I first saw him in like years ago, as an amateur, I came back to the office and you asked me, is he the future heavyweight champion of the world? And I just laughed. I didn't even, I just thought he was like, you know, I didn't think he was bad, but I certainly didn't think he was a future, you know, the guy to take over the sport.
He might not be. It could all still go wrong for Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, but I've just been, I was convinced when he won his world silver medal, I thought, okay, this guy is going places. But yeah, it could all go wrong. But, you know, Klitschko lost a few times before he really reached his best.
Yeah.
And then he went in through this phase where he felt invincible. So losing isn't necessarily bad for a fighter. Even a heavy defeat like Klitschko suffered can it can be the making of a fighter.
Yeah, it can be.
But yeah, nothing's inevitable, certainly not in boxing.
I just think we desperately need now someone that's going to take him. I'm so intrigued to see what happens when he gets to 6, 7, 8 rounds in, and I doubt anything will happen. I'm not thinking he's just immediately going to collapse in a heap because he's so tired. but I think before we get too carried away with Anthony Joshua, we need to see how he copes after 6 rounds, after 8 rounds, after 10 rounds. But
that's
the
true.
Fact of the matter is, may not be anybody out there at the moment that can take him 6.
No. We're 12 and rounds. 12 rounds is a very different event to a 3-round fight.
Of course it is. It really is, and we've seen it before with particularly with heavyweights when there's the stamina can be just a massive issue for them. And I don't doubt for one second that Anthony Joshua is not preparing for 12 round fights at least every time he's in the gym. I'm not doubting that, but actually being in there in a fight is always different to how, you know, how you may think it'll be or how your preparation is telling you it's going to be.
I suppose it's like pacing yourself is a factor as well. You know, maybe George Groves, it's not his stamina, it's throwing too many punches and not pacing himself. And that, I guess that comes from experience. Like Klitschko's the master at working efficiently, isn't he?
Yeah.
But then
he never used to have that. But his first fight he lost against Ross Purity, 11 rounds, that was down to just being absolutely cream crackers. It was. So yeah, you do, it's something that you learn, and I think that, you know, Joshua is so dedicated to his craft, he's intelligent, he's articulate, but there's certain things that can only be taught in the heat of a boxing match.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And knocking everyone out isn't bad in terms of just building up this aura of menace, being intimidating, and then his opponents have to get in the ring with this guy who's 6'6" and is blasting everyone out in a few rounds. It is, you know, it is intimidating. That kind of, having that, building an aura up about yourself does help, I think.
He has got that aura, and since I've followed the sport, which was, I mean, the first time, the first heavyweight I remember watching was Mike Tyson, and it was before he won the world championship, and he was just blasting everybody out. Then he went through, then he fought someone called James Tillis, and then he fought someone called Mitch Green, and back-to-back fights, both of them took him 10 rounds, And then he went on and he just walked through a former cruiserweight champion, Alfonso Ratliff. I think he fought Jose Ribalta, and then he went in against Trevor Burbick. And just the excitement and that level of he just can't be beat, nobody's going to beat this guy. The only person I believe that has duplicated anything like that sense of excitement since in the heavyweight division is Anthony Joshua. Bruno didn't quite have it. Bruno had already lost by the time he really, really emerged on the world scene. Lennox Lewis didn't really have it. Riddick Bowe perhaps. But again, Riddick Bowe, I mean, in the lead up, he had won a really questionable decision. I think it was against Tony Tubbs, former champion. The way Joshua's going at the moment, you know, he could break all records in terms of rounds completed to get to the World Championship. He looks something special, but there isn't a fighter, irrespective of their weight division, that has come along and won every fight in the first two or three rounds. Someone sooner or later will come along and give him a bit of a fight, and that is when we make our judgments, I think. But everything we've seen at the moment suggests he's going to go all the way to the top.
Yeah, and it might be, it's more, it could be sort of a function of the state of the division, in that there's quite a gulf between the elite guys and the rest.
Yeah.
And so, you know, someone like Joshua, who's on his way to the elite,
yeah,
he could plow through the field, but the people at the very top level could be a different story.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I've just bet my life on him beating them all, so there's an hope not.
It's going to be interesting to watch him. And the fact that they sold out tickets within 5-6 hours for Dillian White.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure, you know, the most people are not giving Dillian White that much of a chance here. But it just shows you, a big heavyweight is going in there, knocking people out. People want to watch that.
People want to watch that, and they like, you know, they like a rivalry. And in Dillian, he has his enemy. And Dillian, you know, at a press conference a couple of days before they were fighting different people, Dillian was talking right to him, saying, "You're a fake. You're a good behaving punk," were his words. Which I don't know if that's, he said worse things as well.
Yeah, I've seen the interview. Yeah. Yeah.
And then at the weigh-in, they were they ended up being at the same place at the same time. So there was a bit of a confrontation, or, you know, nothing really happened, but Dillian was sort of gesticulating at him aggressively. And so that sort of rivalry does interest people, and I think it'll create an intensity about the fight, how long it lasts.
We've both really been guilty of completely writing Dillian White off, but I think even though Cornish, even what we've got here is that White really does seem to believe that he's got the beating of Anthony Joshua. I don't think all of it is just hot air. I don't think all of it is just trying to sell a fight. He does genuinely believe that he's got the beating of him. I'm sure he spent a lot of time studying him. Gary Cornish, even though he went for it, didn't really, from what I've seen, and okay, I watched it afterwards, I'd watched a recording of it afterwards, but from what I've seen, it didn't really seem like Gary Cornish went into that fight thinking, "I'm going to win this." He just seemed to go into that fight thinking, "Right, I'm going to try and hit
give
him
it
before
everything.
He hits
yeah.
me." Whereas with White, you sense that you're going to get someone in there with real belief that he can do a job. And with, you know, with Mike Tyson that I spoke about before, a lot of the time with the guys he fought, he'd beaten them before the first bell rang.
Yeah.
Whereas this is why White is dangerous, is because his only experience of Anthony Joshua in a boxing ring, albeit it's a very, very, you know, many years ago and under questionable circumstances, is that he beat Anthony Joshua. So that's in his mind. So it's an interesting fight, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and I think, like, you know, White's a combustible character, and I think he's going to be
unpredictable in the ring. Like, he could be throwing punches when he should be defending, and he could catch Andy Joshua off guard. He could do the unexpected. He could land the shots that make, that suddenly, you know, make people think, oh, you know, Andy Joshua isn't invincible. He can be caught. He can be hit. He can be knocked back.
Exactly, because that's all. That's all it will take for Joshua to lose his whole cloak of invincibility is just for him to get tagged and his knees to wobble. He might go on to win the fight. He might go on to win the fight, but we will see a vulnerability in Anthony Joshua. And but I think at this stage of a heavyweight like Anthony Joshua's development is fascinating, even if he is knocking people out.
Yeah. And why
so quickly?
Yeah. And why he can rise to the occasion. I think, like Tommy Coyle, Luke Campbell, I think Luke Campbell was a massive, you know, I certainly expected him to do a sort of an impressive job. And even though Campbell was winning the rounds, you know, Coyle was going a bit crazy and he went 10, which I didn't expect. So, and then maybe that was maybe part of it being in hole, and Campbell had sort of done everything as an amateur. He had all the glory, but that sort of just fueled Tommy Coyle to try and get what Campbell had. And Dillian White is going to want what Anthony Joshua has got, and he's going to be angry and he's going to be dangerous. And I'm already looking forward to it.
I am. I'm looking forward to it. It's a good one. Okay, so elsewhere, just to wrap up, and we have now been talking for over an hour. The other fights of interest were probably in, there was Peter Quillen was in action, wasn't he? Jamal Charlo, of course. He won a world belt when he knocked out the ancient Canine Bundridge. And there was Tommy Carpentry getting flattened by Adonis Stevenson. Disappointing, isn't it? The Stevenson Carpentry fight, I suppose, but we didn't expect anything different. But the encouraging thing that came out of it is that he was calling out Kovalev afterwards. Do we believe that could possibly happen, given the whole messiness of behind the scenes?
It's just, we've been waiting. I feel like we've been talking about Kovalev Stevenson for years. Just, I don't know. If it was going to happen, it should have happened by now. Fight Beterbiev or something like that, that'll probably be easier to make. Beterbiev's, you know, he's pretty much just as hard an opponent as Kovalev.
It's a good result though, wasn't it, Stevenson Carpentry? I mean, nobody really expected Carpentry to win, but Carpentry had been 12 with Nathan Cleverley.
Yeah.
He'd upset Chad Dawson. So to blow him away so quickly does show us how dangerous that Stevenson is, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's sort of, I guess it's a sign that Stevenson is sort of back to form, where he'd sort of been stuttering a bit in his performances. Certainly against Fonfara, that was the fight where you thought, okay, maybe Stevenson isn't the Superman we thought he was. And the most exciting thing about the week, or, you know, outside of the big events of the weekend, there's some good prospects coming through. Oscar Valdez got a good win. He's one to look out for at featherweight. Errol Spence doing the business at welterweight. You know, I guess Errol Spence is going to be mixing it with the world level welterweight sooner. You know, sooner or later.
Well, he's called out Keith Thurman quite a lot, hasn't he? He's kind of made it clear he wants Keith Thurman.
I'd like to see that fight.
Keith Thurman has said, look, you're not on my radar as yet, but very quickly he will be.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, if we are to take Mayweather's retirement as fact, there's, well, it's interesting, you put something on the website recently that Manny Pacquiao is now our number one pound for pound, which, nothing against Manny Pacquiao, I find it a little bit depressing.
Really?
Well, it's just that there's no new, it's always nice to have a new star kind of take over.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's all to play for. I don't feel that Pacquiao is the pound-for-pound king as such. I just feel like he's kind of the pound, he's pound-for-pound king by default.
Yeah, you know, he's keeping the throne warm, but we don't have an out-and-out pound-for-pound leader of the sport yet.
No, well, it's all, it's, there's a few people that can do it. Let's not get into that subject now.
We can save it.
We'll just save it. We've been going on now for 70 minutes.
Sorry about this.
Okay.
I went off on one.
Let's wrap it up. And you heard it here first. John Dennon picking Anthony Joshua to flatten Vladimir Klitschko. Go out to the bookies now. The odds will be at their longest now.
I picked it to beat everyone.
No, but it's not a crazy prediction. It's not crazy. It's just going to be interesting now to see what happens next.
It could be a weird one. It could be someone like Povetkin is the most difficult style for Joshua.
Povetkin Joshua would be. I mean, that would be. That's tough to call. But fascinating to watch. Anyway, we could keep on yattering. We won't. What time is it?
I think it's tomorrow.
It's time to go home. Okay. All
right. Just tell everyone to buy Boxing News magazine.
Yeah. Well,
you keep us podcasting.
We've got. There's a lot in there. There's all the fallout. There's all everything that went on before in Las Vegas, everything that went on during, everything that went on after. There's a guest column from the one and only Floyd Mayweather. So we're ringside all over the world, really. So there's stuff from Las Vegas, there's stuff from North Greenwich, where Joshua, of course, blew away Gary Cornish. What is the feature this week? Oh, and of course we've got...
Oh, yes.
We've got Tyson Fury providing an exclusive interview.
Coming at us from his own caravan.
Which is, as ever, it's an interesting read with Tyson Fury. It's just loads in there. Just get involved, get on the website.
We could spend hours talking about Tyson Fury.
And thanks for all your support. I'm exhausted.
I have that effect on people. Good luck in your future.